This meeting is now being recorded.
Shalom, everyone. This is Rabbi Eliot Salo Schoenberg speaking, International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. I am hosting this phone call today along with Kathy Elias, Chief Kehilla Officer of the United Synagogue. We are delighted that you will be participating in Interview Week. This call is a part of a series that we call MOCA, Meditations on Career Advancement, which are instructional seminars on best practices for interviewing and finding the right fit for your congregation. Today's topic is best practices for Interview Week. This is a very special time for all of our graduates and for all of our congregations. We are delighted because we have truly today two experts on the line with us who have dealt with this and their students for many years very successfully. From the West Coast, from the Ziegler Rabbinical School, we have Rabbi Cheryl Peretz. And from the East Coast, from the Jewish Theological Seminary, we have Rabbi Lisa Gelber. Thank you, rabbis, for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So the first question that I would like to ask is, so why should congregations be participating? What's the advantage? What's the upside of coming to these interviews?
Who do you want to
Lisa,
start?
Why don't you begin? Go ahead.
Sure. This is Rabbi Gelber. I think this is a great opportunity for communities to come and to see all of our graduating students, to get a taste of the potential that these new rabbis who are going out into the world to serve as spiritual leaders have for your communities. You have obviously been nurturing your values and your practices in your individual communities, and the students are eager to become part of the fabric of the individual communities. I also think that this particular week, while it can be exhausting, it can also be really exhilarating for the students and for the community representatives, the search committee representatives as well, because when you come knowing who it is you are looking for, you have done your homework as a community, and you have identified the characteristics and leadership potential of the person you want to serve as your either senior rabbi or second rabbi in your community, you will begin to see as you meet these people where it is they can fit into your community or not. But regardless of whether they'll become your rabbi, you will walk away very excited by the potential for leadership in the conservative movement. Cheryl?
Rabbi Peretz?
I would just add one thing, which is that everybody puts together resumes in different ways and will focus on their passions, interests, and skills. But I think having this kind of interview week gives you as a community an opportunity to meet candidates that you might not otherwise have realized may have potential for your community. And so the practice of interviewing everyone who demonstrates an interest, I think, opens the minds and hearts of both the candidates and the synagogues to new possibilities of partnership of who might be a good as their rabbi.
Great, thanks. So let's get into some of the real specifics. So there is a tradition, some congregations enjoy this, some may not be aware of it. Let's talk a little bit about the opening Devar Torah.
So I'll take that one first. This is Rabbi Peretz. So I actually don't necessarily think that it has to be an opening Devar Torah. We advise our students to always come prepared to deliver a Devar Torah, but to wait for that invitation from the interview committee. And for those committees that choose to ask the candidate to share that, I think it's a tremendous opportunity to get to see the approach that an individual candidate takes to how they would speak a voice of Torah in a way that reflects real life understanding and the ability to communicate that Torah in accessible ways for a community. And likewise, I think it helps the candidates, the rabbis, to really begin to connect on the level of Torah, which is, after all, really what they are applying to bring. Many of the other things are an extension of that, and I think this gives an opportunity to start to get a feel in that way.
I agree 100% with Rabbi Peretz. I would also say that this invitation to teach is a chance for the students to bring their own Torah to life in a way that sets the tone for the meeting and will help you frame just what it is you are going to be doing during those 50 minutes and thinking forward into the future and what it will be like to have this person in your community.
So you mentioned that 50 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about that. This is unlike job fairs that many universities run, where people line up and hand out resumes to people. Everything is usually standing up, and maybe you get 3 or 4 minutes with a recruiter, and you certainly don't get it in a private space. So this is different than when IBM comes to recruit on the campus of the University of Southern California. So you have a private space, and you have 50 minutes, which is either long or short, depending on how you view it. So I'm wondering about what's the best way to utilize those 50 minutes.
This is Rabbi Gelber. I would suggest, if you were to start with a Devar Torah, I think it's a wonderful way, again, to set the tone. I think what will help discern how to use the rest of the time comes out of the organization of the committee. Again, you know, what sort of homework have you done? I think it's important to think about what questions you're going to ask definitively. What are you sure you want to ask every candidate, and what do you want to ask in relation to the particular candidate's interview? I think it's good for the students and these candidates to hear different voices asking the questions. And I think it's really important to give the students the opportunity to ask a question at the end, because as you interact with these candidates, you will learn about how they envision their rabbinate, and you will also see how they have done their homework, how they've taken the things about which they are passionate and read those out of what's going on in your community. Those questionnaires are an exceptional introduction to your individual synagogue communities. And the interview itself is sort of the next layer of getting to know the shul. And this is a chance for you and the students to see, again, what that match might look like. So, again, the Devar Torah questions around the table, and then some time at the end to invite the students to ask a question.
Yeah,
Rabbi Peretz, do you want to talk more specifically about the types of questions?
Yeah, I just want to say a couple of things. One is that I think it's important to just step back for a moment and realize that the work that you all are doing as committee members is really a sacred task. And I'm sure that there have been moments where you feel the weight of that task and the weight of the time commitment. And I also know that your community has invested great responsibility in you. And I think that the interviews in New York, you really feel that, because you're away from your community interviewing these candidates that you're deciding if you're going to invite back to your community. And I want to say that at the same time as you are looking to see if there's a shidduch on your end, a match, the candidates are doing the same thing. And so I would urge you to be paying attention to both how questions are answered and the things outside of the questions, body language, how interactive somebody might be, how they may or may not connect with your community, how, if you're looking for an assistant, do they interact with the senior rabbi even in that time? Because I think that one of the things the candidates need to realize, and the synagogues both, frankly, is that you only get one chance to make a first impression. And so for me, that's what this 50-minute interview really is, like getting to know each other well enough to know if you actually want to continue the conversation. And so I think it's about having the candidates really share with you a little bit about who they are as people and who they are as rabbis. And I think the way they think of building community, the way they think of addressing Torah, the way they think of interacting with people is all a part of that. I just recently heard a story that I have to just share really quickly. Somebody was telling me about a weekend interview that a rabbi had gone on and delivered a Devar Torah that used a lot of sports metaphors. And it happened to be a Women's League Sisterhood Shabbat, and he came pretty quick not on the same page as this rabbi was in understanding the references in this Devar Torah. And afterwards, another rabbi who happened to be in the audience asked this rabbi, were you aware that it was a Women's League Shabbat? And the response that this rabbi got from the rabbi who was the candidate was, yes, but it was such a great Devar Torah, I needed to still deliver it. Right? And so person subsequently did not get that job. and I think that that's exactly illustrating what I'm saying, that it's really important that you be able to tell that this is a rabbi whose sensitivities and awarenesses would work in your specific community. So I would ask them, tell us about yourself, what about our community attracted you and makes you want to be our rabbi? Where do you stand in your own personal observance, and where might you see that working, or if you think there will be obstacles being in our community? I think asking about specific experience they have that goes along with your job description is very important. And all that can only come if you've defined the qualities and skills that you're looking for. And that's what the questions need to then be geared towards.
Great. I mean, one of the things that is coming across that I hear loud and clear is everyone to remember, I mean, it may be called an interview week, but it's much more like a conversation. It's a two-way street. There's give and take going back and forth between the two, and the students are as much interviewing the congregations as much as the congregations and the committee are interviewing the students. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about not exactly interview week, but rather making an offer to the rabbinical candidate. In our past, especially last year, we had a number of conversations about some of the awkwardness or some of the issues that surround when a congregation has made a decision and now needs to call three rabbis and say, we'd like you to come for an interview. We talk about some best practices for congregations being in touch with the students.
So I'll take this one first. So I always, you know, part of why we've given some time between the end of interview week and when weekend interviews can be invitations can be extended is to allow the committees in the synagogues to go back and really understand who they're interested in, will work with this time schedule that you have for interviewing. And I think it's really important, and by the way, I give the same advice to the students, to really create three groups. One is the people that you know you want to invite in for the weekend. A second one is the ones you know might be excellent candidates for rabbi, but not for your community. Those are the ones that I call the no thank you list. And then there's the middle group, which are the maybes, the second tier, if you will. So maybe might be possibilities, but you've already selected you know, four or three or four or five or however many you're going to bring in to invite in for the weekend. And obviously you're going to extend the invitation to those that you're going to invite for the weekend. But I think it's just as important to actually notify in a kind and considerate way the people who are in that second group who are going to be no thank yous. It's always hard to feel like you're rejecting someone, but I think in terms of the job search for those candidates, it helps them know the lay of the land and where their efforts can or should be placed as well. The trickiest group is the third group, the ones that might be second tier, because on the one hand, you're not going to invite them in for a weekend now, but you might want to hold on to their candidacy in the event that you don't find your match in the first round. That said, I think it's always a matter of asking what's the risk you're willing to bear, because in that time frame that you're keeping them on the B list, they may actually find another match, in which case if you come back to them in a month, they may no longer be available. And that's the risk you're in some way saying you're willing to bear by putting them in a second list. And the only thing I want to add about that is there are, you know, we have often likened this experience in New York to the speed dating. You know, it's very quick. A lot of people, 50 minutes goes very quickly. You're doing a lot of interviews, and you have to create some first impressions. And there are some people whose characters' makeup makes it such that they can do that kind of interviewing really well, and others who that's a not as natural of a process for them. And so what I would urge you in doing in thinking about these lists is to really go the step deeper than just how the person looks or how they dress or the external parts, but how they answer the questions that give you a sense of their values and commitments that might or might not work in your community.
I think all of this is about building relationships in connection with this very important task that you've been entrusted with by your communities. Obviously, you know this already. Everyone should be gracious and kind in how you extend yourself to the candidates. The candidates should be gracious and kind and appropriate to you as well. With that in mind, it's a very anxious time for everyone. The students want jobs. They want parnassa. They want to get out there and do their work. And you want rabbis, and you need rabbis. So to keep in mind, all of these students have potential. Try and discern as best you can who has the best potential for your shul. We know how difficult it is to make these decisions, that there are only select Shabbatot, and that there is, you know, there's an end to sort of the search period, the initial search period. It may be that some shuls don't find rabbis in that initial period. And we tell the students the same thing too. Don't feel badly. Nothing went wrong. There are still jobs and opportunities after the calendar that has been imposed, after the end of that calendrical date goes by. There are still opportunities out there. It depends on what happens in those initial conversations, and we don't know how the road will unfold. What I would say, though, is sometimes it's tempting to call a candidate and say, we're not inviting you out, but you are, that's because we have, let's say, I'll use much more than we have. We have 10 weekends we can bring people out, and you are the 11th person. Well, it's actually really confusing for students to hear where they are on your hierarchy. I think it's appropriate to tell a student you're very impressive, to wish them luck. That leaves the door open to call them again should they be on, as Cheryl said, the C list. But again, I think telling them where they are on a list is confusing, and it can be misleading, and I think it can be misleading for the committees as well. So to feel good about the people you've chosen to bring out, to live into that experience, and then at the end of the day to see where you are, and then to move on to next steps.
Great. I want to take a pause here for a moment and see if any of our listeners, any of our participants on the call have a question that's come to mind that we haven't covered that they feel they'd like to ask our deans?
This is Betty Ann Downey at Temple Beth Shalom in Long Beach, California. I have a logistics question. Would it be appropriate to either do Skype or a conference call during the interviews while we're in New York with our folks back home in California?
I'm going to take the liberty to answer this.
Please.
This is Rabbi Schoenberg. I would say that it's risky from a technological point of view.
Okay.
So meaning we can't support you if your stream is not strong, if you lose the signal. It's not that someone from the IT department can rush to your side to get you the signal. There are some rooms in the building which have better connections than others, and sometimes that varies from day to day. So you cannot be in any way confirmed that you will get it. If you want to set that up and at your discretion, try it. That's fine.
Okay.
But also understand that it's a little awkward for the candidates that are in the room. I worry about the technology. It does not have as strong a track record in being able to do that since we've tried it at other times. So that's at your risk. So it certainly you could, but it may not work for you.
Appreciate the perspective. Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Could I ask a quick question about the B list? My name is Pam Randall from Temple Beth Lil Bethel. How would you suggest, well, are you telling us that we should be communicating with all of our candidates regardless of whether or not we're inviting them back for a Shabbat pretty much around that 20th? Is that a goal for us with all of the candidates?
Rabbi Peretz, I'm going to jump in here for a minute. I actually think it's good to have some communication with all of the candidates so that they don't feel forgotten, and it also it helps to maintain some sort of relationship. So I think it's worth the phone call or the email to every single person with whom you meet.
And so what would you say to someone? It feels a little awkward if you're kind of saying, you know, we're not really sure. We like many things about you, so you're sort of on that B list. You know what I'm saying? Like it's sort of an awkward thing to say to somebody.
Yeah, this is Rabbi Peretz, and I actually agree with Rabbi Geller on this. And the way I would word that is, we really enjoyed speaking to you, and we think you have so many wonderful qualities, and we think that wherever you land, you're going to be a great rabbi. And while we cannot extend an invitation for you to visit now, we would like to keep the lines of communication open, and we understand that that means you're going to be continuing your search, and we want you to do that. But if we don't find a match and you don't find a match, you know, we would like to circle back around and be back in touch. And by the way, I would only have those conversations after
right.
you've extended the invitations to the people that you want to extend invitations
right.
to,
mm-hmm.
and they've actually accepted.
And you've heard back from them. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a way to do that, and, you know, to that it's the risk you're willing to bear is that they might not only find a place, they might say, well, thank you, but I'm no longer interested then in being in touch in a month.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's okay. Right? But I think the uncertainty of not knowing where they stand is actually greater.
This is Dennis Sasso, Indianapolis. Have a question,
mm-hmm.
please. What is the propriety of, after the day's interview, if one is particularly impressed by a candidate or two, inviting them for a cup of coffee that evening for continuing the conversation?
Rabbi Schoenberg?
I like coffee.
We'll invite you.
We can do one, too.
I especially like Central American, either Panamanian or Costa Rican coffee.
Okay, bring some.
I think having an informal cup of coffee afterwards is fine.
Okay, good, thank you.
Yeah, just know that it's students, it will What's the best way to say this?
It will be, other people might know.
It will
well, everyone will know, and I'm not
it
saying don't
brutal.
Do it because
it
of that. Yeah, everyone will know. But the question is, what are the messages that you want to put out? If this is follow up with students with whom you're really interested, okay. If it's to get to know some other people, know that to get to know the students at a deeper level, know that the people who don't get invited for coffee will sort of wonder what's going on.
Okay, it would need to be a discreet thing and use judgment. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course.
Follow up to that. When we leave the 50-minute session with each candidate, are you saying that we should leave the room neutral with everybody, that we should not let any candidate know that we will be interested in getting back to them and inviting them, or we should
correct? That's what the February correct. I'm glad you asked this clarification. Yes, that one of, and it's good to explain the reason why what's behind all of it, which is to lower everybody's level of anxiety as much as possible. We have discovered that as soon as one congregation says to one rabbinical student, you are invited, everybody, students and congregations, all panic. And rather than you having an opportunity to neutrally now go and interview the rest of your candidates for the day, everybody's in a different mindset. And that, so we've just learned this from experience from many, many years ago, kind of holding things for as long as possible so that people can have time to make considerations, reflect, perhaps have a cup of coffee, have a second interview after interview week is over, works best for the congregations so they don't feel pressured and they don't feel suckered that somebody got in before them. This way, as much as possible, and it's not ideal, and it's certainly not perfect, lowers the levels of anxiety as much as possible.
Thank you.
This is Jeff Elliott. This is Jeff Elliott from Montebello. I have just a clarification to request concerning the Devar Torahs. Is each student clearly prepared with a Devar Torah? Do we need to reach out to those candidates who will be seeing during interview week to ask them to be prepared to open this session with a Devar Torah?
This is Rabbi Peretz. I'll take that. We do tell them that, you know, they should be prepared, though I think it has worked very well in the past when the synagogues that know they want to ask for that have let them know. And I would say, frankly, and I say this with all the love in my heart for my students and for rabbis who I want to see get jobs, you know, that's part of the evaluation. If they're interviewing for a job to bring Torah to a community and you say, can you share a Dvar Torah with us? And they say, no, I don't have anything to share. That's problematic. So it's really up you in some ways, whether you want to let them know or not, but I think it's a nice gesture if you want to.
Yeah, we tell all the students as well here at JTS they should always be prepared to teach Torah, in this case, brief words of Torah. But I agree with Rabbi Peretz. I think it's a good way to open your conversation, to open your relationship with them if you send an email to students. If you know that you want them to give a Devar Torah, to let them know.
Yeah.
If you want them to give a 15-minute Devar Torah, tell them that. If you want 2 minutes, you tell them that too. And then also it helps to frame what that interaction might be.
This is Dennis Sasso again.
Thank you.
We actually had a student who wrote to us asking whether he should be prepared to give a Devar Torah. And I'd like to enter a dissenting point of view. We said no. This is an opportunity for us informally to get to know one another, for us to meet and converse with you, for you to get to know the congregation through us. My sense is that asking a student facing two people to give a Devar Torah creates a very artificial situation, and may not show the true, homiletical or speaking strengths of a student. So I would never put a student in that situation in that context. I think there's another time for that.
Dennis, I think that's fine as well.
Yeah, I think that's that's you know, however each shul wants to conduct its time with the students, they're going to end up, they'll end up teaching their Torah, offering that to you throughout the conversation regardless. They'll have, you know, you just have to feel good as a committee how you want to use your time.
Sounds to me like a test.
No, it's not. No, no test.
But certainly, as I'm going to begin to draw this conversation to a close, say that's why it's optional. And I think, Rabbi Sasso, your point is very valid, that you have other ways that you will make those determinations. And that's why we clearly say, think about how you, as a community, want to structure your 50 minutes. And remember, you're also
creating... question?
Very quick, sir.
Sure. Thanks. Larry Brayman from Temple Beth Am, Los Angeles. Is there any limit to interaction then in between the interview day and the 20th in terms of following up? I may have missed this, following up, Skype calls with committees, et cetera.
We are inviting you to do that if you want to have a second conversation with someone because you're either unsure or because you want to clarify a point. Yes. Congregations have specifically asked us in the past, so we have built that into the schedule. That's why the callback is on Wednesday, which is several days after interviews close, so congregations can do several things. One, hold a meeting back in their home community to, as a whole committee, to evaluate their data. And if there are questions, can have a follow-up interview by phone or by Skype with a candidate to clarify some points. They ask a different set of questions, yes. And then, but not a conversation about, okay, now we want to invite you to come, or if we invite you to come, will you accept? That's the conversation that takes place in New York, by phone, on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. New York time, 4 p.m. California time. That's when the offer to come for an interview on site takes place.
Right,
I'd like
thank
to conclude
you.
by asking Kathy Elias of United Synagogue, Chief Kehillah Officer, if she'd like to sum up and make some key informational points.
I have just only one observation to sum up, that when I have seen congregational leaders go to interview week, it is a chance to do one additional thing that is a wonderful opportunity, and that is to be in the place of a sacred place where our rabbis have been trained and lived for at least the last 5 years. And I believe that that gives us an opportunity to remember what it is, the sacred task that we're all working on, and it's a great start to a relationship as well, to understand where they're coming from. So and that's pretty much all that I have to add. Thank you.
I just want to add that some of them are trained in that location. Others are coming cross-country.
And I appreciate that. It is the concept of understanding that a rabbi is different from a CEO of a corporation of any other type of person who we're bringing in. But this is a person who has really spent the last many years of his or her life living in a very special kind of environment and community. And so we're entering into that relationship with a person with a special kind of training.
Wait, could I ask just one really brief technical question?
No, I'm sorry. I need to conclude the conversation. Please email the question to me, and we will get you an answer. I'd like to conclude now at this point. This has been Mocha Monday. Our subject has been interview week. Our guest presenters have been Rabbi Cheryl Peretz of the Ziegler School for Rabbinic Studies in Los Angeles and Rabbi Lisa Gelber in New York at JTS, the Jewish Theological Seminary. The call has been hosted today by Kathy Elias of the United Synagogue and Ellie Schoenberg of the Rabbinical Assembly. Thank you so much for joining together with us.